It's time for the Lamb McRae Legal Show, featuring different lawyers from the law firm of Lamb McRae.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name's Dan Bush, and I'm sitting here with my partner, Steve Jarman. Steve and I are criminal defense attorneys at, as you just heard, Lamb McRae, which is here in Westchester, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia, for those of you who might not hear this live in Chester County. And it's been a while since we've been back in the studio like this.
A year, right?
And we were just talking about our last episode, but time flies, and unfortunately, we just haven't had an opportunity to get in here. But I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to be sitting next to you again, Steve. And let's do this. Let's jump right in.
Yeah.
I know we have a topic today that has a whole lot of juice to it and some good stuff, I think, to talk about. So what Steve and I do when we're coming up with a topic is we throw things around, and this one kind of jumped out at us. And I've been practicing law now 26 years, 25 years, something like that. And as we're sitting around trying to come up with a topic, it dawned on me, I said, the biggest difference in what I do now and what I did 25, 26 years ago comes down to one thing. And I think it's totally changed what we do and how we do it. And that's technology. And when I say technology, we'll go through absolutely everything that's changed. But literally, it's just what you think of as the world has evolved. It has totally changed our profession. It changes how we prepare for a case, what we get before we get a case or when we get a case, and then how we actually present it to people who matter, the judge or the jury or something like that. And I'm sitting here and going, my God, am I really that old?
Yeah, you are.
I know, you're right. So, like, I don't feel decrepit, but then sometimes when we start talking about this stuff, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so much older than I used to be. So, magic question to you, Steve. How old are you?
44.
Okay.
Think about it for a second.
And you started practicing law when you were how old?
26.
Did you start as, I know you were a former prosecutor, did you go right into practicing law as a prosecutor?
Yes.
Right out of law school?
Right out of law school. And then I was an intern before that with the same DA's office. So my last year of law school, I was with that same DA's office.
Okay. Magic question here. Do you remember your first case? Your first trial? Let's do that.
Everybody remembers their first trial. I don't think we ever forget that.
Okay. Tell me what your first criminal prosecuting trial was.
Yeah, so it was a simple DUI. You know, when you're a young DA, they want to kind of get your feet wet with something that shouldn't be too complex. Mine was a DUI / possession of controlled substance case, and it was a refusal DUI. So
what's a refusal?
So refusal is when you get pulled over, if the police suspect that you are under the influence, they can ask that you give a sample of your blood or breath and determine actually what your BAC is. A refusal is when you just say, no, I'm not going to do that.
Say, good luck proving your DUI. I'm not giving you blood.
Exactly. So that was, so we didn't have any blood to, you know, from a presentation standpoint, there's no expert, there's no blood to present. It's just officer observation as far as a DUI is concerned. Did the officer feel that they observed significant signs of intoxication? And then there was also possession of a controlled substance. The person who was arrested, they found some controlled substance like in the door panel. So it was a constructive possession case.
Okay.
It wasn't on his person, but it was in the car. So his defense was, number one, I wasn't under the influence to a degree that I couldn't drive. And two, the drugs in the car, they weren't mine.
Do you remember how many police officers were involved? On something like that, maybe
two.
One or two. Right?
Yeah, it was definitely no more than two.
Okay. And this was probably, so for those of you who are unaware, we used to have an older courthouse in Chester County that was built, I don't know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, something like that. Probably older than that. It was about as technologically advanced as my grandparents' house was, which is not very technologically advanced, I promise you. And we now have a different courthouse, one that was built in 2008,
yeah.
And it's a whole different world. Tell me about your experience in the old courthouse with that first case.
Yeah, so it was in the bottom floor. If you remember that bottom floor where there's no, I mean, there's no built-in projectors, no technology whatsoever in that courtroom. But at the time, did my first trial in 2006, there was no technology really to present. There was no, you know, for those of you who don't know, usually some police departments have body cams now. Some police departments have MVRs, that's a recorder in front of their car that's capturing everything that's going on. None of that was in this case. There was no body cam. There was no police video. So it was just officer testimony, period.
So cop getting up there and saying, hey, this is what I saw.
Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this is what I saw. Believe me or don't believe me.
Exactly. And then the defendant did take the stand and said, you know, I wasn't drunk and the controlled substances weren't mine.
So at that point, jury says, okay, I either believe the cop or I believe the defendant, right?
Yep. In the presentation, from my standpoint, I didn't use any props. I didn't use any, PowerPoint presentations. It was really just straightforward. I think maybe two cops testified, and then the defendant testified. I cross-examined them. We did go to closing arguments.
So I can give you a very quick version of my first one. Again, I remember this one. It was out of East Whiteland, which is like Fraser, Malvern area, and it was a hand-to-hand buy, which is one. It was an undercover person. So a police officer recruits an undercover person, a person that's working with the police, and he buys drugs off of a drug dealer. And it all happened on a street corner, like you would think in the movies. And so it's that hand-to-hand buy, and the cops are sitting somewhere and trying to watch it, but they can't really see it. So you have the trial ended up coming down to, actually, you know what? They had a wire, so they had to put the old-fashioned wire on the undercover, and he goes up and he has a conversation. So we had a transcript of the actual conversation, and you have a drug dealer talking to a person who's purchasing drugs, and that's the thing that was read into the record, which was probably a mistake by me as a young prosecutor using that language. You make a lot of mistakes as you're doing this thing, and that was really one of them, because I remember the jury, as I was saying their words, I remember them looking at me going, oh my God, this guy's talking like that in front of me. It was a mistake number one. I never did it again.
Yeah.
But technology-wise, it was literally just reading a transcript because we didn't have the ability, the capabilities in the old courthouse to play this thing.
That was going to be my question. Why didn't you?
Yeah, we couldn't.
Yeah.
We couldn't. So we had it written out, and then we had the undercover guy testifying and the police officer testifying. But you're trying to paint a picture to a jury, and they're sitting there because they don't know any different 20 years ago. So now you have, do I believe their story or do I believe the bad guy's story? Nowadays, the world is totally different.
Ouch.
Juries have taken, and I wrote this quote when we were coming up with this topic. I said, juries say, don't tell me, show me.
Real quick, like, how much do you think that has to do with some of the television shows that have come along? CSI, like...
Absolutely.
CSI now has, it's a verb, or... whatever it's called,
right.
The CSI effect, right? A show is now used in legal vernacular to describe what juries expect now.
Yeah, like Googled, Google it or something like
exactly.
that. Yeah,
exactly.
Just CSI it or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah, 100%. It's what people expect. And as a performer, like I think we are, when we get into court, you've got to perform up to the levels of the people that are expecting certain things from you. And... so that's kind of a precursor as to what we're going to talk about for the next 20, 25 minutes or so, because this thing is vastly changed, and it's so different. And I don't mean to fast forward things and say that the courtroom presentation is different. It starts most basically with the investigation itself, the police. The way police investigate crimes now is astronomically different as well.
And the way we have to defend is astronomically different.
Yeah.
Sometimes to our advantage, sometimes to our disadvantage.
What do you mean?
So, for instance, you know, just on the defense, you know, fast forward, you know, many years now, now I'm doing defense work. I think it's in the last couple of years, I had a client who was charged with assault, I believe unfairly. And they were consistent in their story that they were leaving a parking lot. Somebody, you know, cut them off. The other person was in road rage, threw something at their car, and basically, you know, got into their face. But there was nothing else to really support that. But somewhere along the line, we figured out that there was a bank across the street from where this intersection would have been. So I subpoenaed, reached out to that bank, subpoenaed any video from an ATM that would have been facing that direction, and got the video. Lo and behold, it supported exactly what my client has said happened. I presented that to the DA, and that ended up getting the case dropped. So that right there would not have been something that would have, we would have had to litigate that in court, you know, 10, 15 years ago, because my client wouldn't have been believed. They would have stuck to their story. The alleged victim would have stuck to their story. But this was a way we could eliminate even going to trial by finding something that didn't exist 10 years ago.
And you're right. It cuts both ways. And this is going way back, and this is a smaller level case than some of the things I do. But I remember back in the day when I was younger, I had a DUI. And it was when the MVRs, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Wait, you had a DUI, or you represented somebody with a DUI?
Good. I appreciate the correction. Thank you. No, I was representing a young lady who had a DUI. And she swore up and down to me, I wasn't drunk. Their case is BS, and there's no way they're going to be able to prove it. Let's go to trial. And then we got a recording from the police. And again, we're going to get into MVRs in a second, but what an MVR is basically the dash cam that everybody sees on TV. It's the camera that sits on the, like behind the rear view mirror in a police cruiser. So in a DUI, what'll normally happen is the police are smart. They know this stuff is going to be on camera, and they ask the person, if you ever got pulled over by the police and were involved in this situation, these interactions with a driver of a vehicle always occur right in front of the police car. And there's a reason. It's so it can be recorded on camera. So this particular case was recorded on camera, and I said to the client, I said, all right, listen, we're supposed to get the MVR in a couple of days. I'll bring you back in. She was adamant. We're going to trial. And we get the MVR. I had watched it, and I took her down to one of my conference rooms, and I said, look, take 15 minutes, and I want you to watch this thing. I'm going to go up to my office for a second. I come back, and she goes, oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed. Let's see if we can work out a guilty plea. So it cuts both ways. It's good for them. It's good for us. So technology helps out the system in that way, right?
I mean, similar to your situation, a recent case that I had was a client who was being chased by, well, let me rephrase. They were doing bike riding, and where you're not supposed to do bike riding. And the police gave chase, and the client was adamant that they wouldn't be seen anywhere and wouldn't be able to be identified. And so when I got the discovery in the case, that's the evidence that the prosecutor turns over before trial. I looked through all the discovery, and there's the dash cams. And, you know, the chances of picking up somebody's facial features even on the dash cam with two moving vehicles is going to be pretty hard. But unfortunately for my client, he happened to cut in front of the police officer and almost pause.
Uh-oh.
And smile and right on the camera, there he is, as clear as day. I take a snapshot of that with my phone and send it to him and just say, that looks like you, right? He's like, damn, they got me. So, I mean,
so that would have been Commonwealth Exhibit 1 at trial, right?
There's nothing we could do about that. But again, technology, you know, again, 10 to 15 years ago, that police vehicle probably wouldn't have had a dash cam. You know, this wasn't the state police. Yeah. This is local police. So wouldn't even have had that. It would have been the officer's word against my client's word.
All right. So let's talk about some of the evolution of technology. We've talked about these MVRs. Again, MVR stands for Motor Vehicle Recording Device, MVR. And again, it is typically, it's stationed right behind the rear view mirror in a police cruiser, and it has its fantastic points, but it also has its limitations as well. The way they normally work is that this is a recording device that's constantly recording. It's always on, and as far as what the police want to capture, generally there's two ways to these things work totally differently for each individual unit or each individual type, but generally there's two ways to operate it. And one is when the police officer activates his overhead lights, the device records anywhere from like 30 to 45 seconds back. And that's when it starts recording, at least for what you can present in a court case or something like that. The other way is to manually turn this thing on. And that's usually probably the least used by the police officers. So if something occurs in front of a vehicle, like a police officer following a vehicle or a DUI test, or a lot of times what they'll do is they'll interview a suspect right in front of the car so it's on camera that way, then MVRs are really good. But they have their limitations too. Generally speaking, these things don't have microphones on the unit itself, so there's no sound. The sound will typically come from an officer will wear like a lapel mic, but he has to activate it. And there are many times that they don't activate it for one reason or another. And you and I can probably argue about, you and I, and probably throw a police officer in here and we can argue about why they do or don't turn it on or off. But that's generally a hand-activated mic. So if the officer turns it on and he gets out of his vehicle, it'll Bluetooth its way back to the device and you'll be able to hear what's going on outside of the vehicle for up to a certain range. But if they don't, then you'll just see what's going on and you don't get the exact context of what's being seen or what's being talked about. So all you do is see things. And now you're back to where we were before. You have to take the officer's testimony as to what's going on versus a potential defendant's testimony as to, no, this is what he was really saying to me. The other thing is that the MVR only looks straight forward. It doesn't go back and forth. It doesn't scan. Yep. Exactly. It doesn't move with the subjects moving. So it's very limited there. So what most police departments in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania have done, at least, is they've updated. They no longer just go with an MVR. Most of them have MVRs in their cars, but now they do exactly what you talked about before, the body-worn cameras. The body-worn cameras are just cameras that typically will go right in the middle of an officer's chest, and they don't pivot unless the officer pivots, but they give you a pretty darn good impression as to what's going on out there. And they have audio as well, so you could hear everything. And have you run into those in your cases?
Oh, yeah. This is why, you know, to defend the case back in the day, you could pretty much say, okay, this is how long it's going to take me to review the evidence in this case. Because it's usually just going to be a police report and maybe a few other documents. The cost of litigation is definitely gone up because of technology. Like when I'm getting discovery now, I'm not getting the police report, which it could be 15 to 30 pages. That's just the beginning. Almost always now I'm getting videos from different angles, especially if there's multiple police involved, 5 police, 6 police. You're getting the videos from every one of their cars, multiple angles, backseat and front view. You're getting their body cams, everybody who's wearing a body cam and it was activated. You're getting all those different angles. So, I mean, that can be good and it can be bad. But there's not a lot of unknown now because there's so much cameras. There's so many cameras. There's so much viewpoint. So,
and that comes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's the jury's approach on thing is don't tell me about something.
Show
it to me. They expect these things.
Yeah.
So the issue becomes when you don't have them, why don't you have them? And that cuts both ways as well. But generally as a defense attorney, if we don't have those type of things, I'm going to blame the police and say, you know, you're telling me this, but we would know if you had a camera on. I know you had a camera on. Why wasn't it turned on? Well, it was malfunctioning. Yeah. Or whatever.
That's what you have. I mean, that's just defense 101. If any absence of evidence, you got to make that the whole case. I had a DUI case a few years ago where clients on the side of the road, outside of the vehicle, but it's like on a ramp. And so the officer approaches. According to the officer, he says, "Hey, I got into an accident." Client saying, "I wasn't driving. Somebody else was driving, then they took off." So for whatever reason, the MVR was working. So you saw them interacting, but his lapel mic was not working or was damaged. So I made that the whole case, you know, and I won. I mean, my client was acquitted because I've made that the whole case. Why is this not here? Because you have to assume that it's not here because it was bad for them, and right? And that's a powerful argument.
Look, I want to read you something. This comes from the Pennsylvania State Police, what are called field regulations. And this is a little bit older, but I think it probably still applies. I don't know if there's updated ones, but check this out. This is only talking about MVRs. And the reason why it's only talking about MVRs is because the Pennsylvania State Police, as a unit, they are the largest law enforcement body in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. But for some reason, they don't have body cameras. None of them. And I, quite frankly, not to disparage my state trooper friends out there, but I haven't heard a good explanation as to why they don't have body cameras.
You just commented on this recently on the,
I did.
The criminal defense forum.
I did, yeah, okay. I did. I don't get it. I don't get it why they as a unit, choose not to have it. I know they'll say budgetary reasons, but I would imagine the people of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania would be happy. I don't know if happy is the right word, but it would be okay with spending a little extra money to know what the law enforcement people out there are doing, because most of the work that law enforcement does is phenomenal.
Most of the time, Dan, it's going to be bad for us anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
Most of the time, like, you know, the evidence is going to help them not have to go to court, because, you know, the overwhelming majority of the time, they're doing their jobs. They're, you know, arresting the right suspects. And so it's just going to be more evidence that is against our client. So I don't see the explanation, because 9 times out of 10, it's going to benefit them, not us.
Sure. You want to, like I just said, that I can't put a percentage on it, but the overwhelming majority of what law enforcement police officers do out there is absolutely fantastic work. When I have a trouble at my house, or if I had trouble at my house, I want to know that there's going to be a darn good police officer that shows up, and they are. I know in Chester County here, we're fantastically lucky. Our law enforcement is phenomenal.
Sure.
Look at the situation, the god-awful situation that we just had in Nashville. And when they released those body cams, those officers that went in there, they are literally the definition of heroes. And people should see what the good work these people do out there is. On the converse, you've seen some other situations, beatings, whatever it is. And I'm not talking about individual cases, but generally speaking, you also see some of the things the police officers do that you go, whoa, I don't want my cops doing this kind of stuff. So here's what I want to read you. This is from the field regulations from the Pennsylvania State Police. And this is only talking about MVRs. It says that the program goals of the MVRs. It says the use of MVR equipment enables the department, meaning the state police, to accomplish many objectives, including but not limited to the following. Number one, enhanced officer safety. Number two, improved documentation of events, actions, conditions, and statements made during incidents. Number three, documentation of evidence and scenes. Number four, enhanced reports preparation and improved courtroom testimony. Number five, improved training capabilities. Number six and number eight are very similar. Improved public accountability and enhanced public trust by preserving documentation of member-citizen interaction. And then finally, protection against false accusation of misconduct. So you can see in there that the public wants to know what's going on out there, and it cuts both ways, the good, the bad. They want to believe everything that we just talked about, and then they want to see when the bad stuff happens as well. So that goes back to kind of what we had said before, that the people we're ultimately presenting a case to in court, they go, well, why isn't this on video? give me a good reason why it's not on video, because the video is good for everybody in this courtroom right now.
Yeah. Nah, reading that is kind of like, why wouldn't that same logic apply to body cams?
Right? That's exactly what I thought.
It's going to do all the same things to a higher degree.
No, I couldn't agree with you anymore. So you kind of sit there and you say, well, why not? And again, I haven't really heard a good explanation, but this show isn't about that. So the biggest thing, if you were going to say
just put this in perspective, put a bow on that thought, Philadelphia, all their officers wear body cams. And I mean, that's where the most activity Absolutely. In the state's coming from, right? And so you would think if Philadelphia is going to do it, you know, our biggest city, why wouldn't our biggest, you know, law enforcement agency in the state want to do likewise?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Turning the page a little bit. If you were going to point to one piece of technology in the last 20 years that's been the game changer, what would it be?
What about triangulation?
What is triangulation?
Triangulation is the ability for law enforcement to take your cell phone, where your cell phone was pinging from, and find out exactly where you were.
Okay, so you were a little bit more advanced than I was looking for an answer. Okay.
So I think that's been a game changer, because I've had, for me personally, I've had success because of that, and I've had loss because of that. The success was a case where a client was accused of assaulting an ex-girlfriend. He was adamant out the gate. Man, I wasn't even in that town. I wasn't nowhere near that person. I haven't seen that person in 15 years. Okay, where were you? I was in Philadelphia. This crime would have happened in Chester County. So you get the cell phone records. The government triangulates the phone and sees he was in Philadelphia. Case closed.
Yeah.
It's over. On the flip side, well, go. I think my story on the flip side is too long. But,
okay. But so if I'm stepping back a second, I was looking for, I love the triangulation part of things. I was looking for more just a basic thing, and that is something that every single one of us, people in this room I know, and probably every person you come in contact throughout the day has one of these, and that's your cell phone.
Well, that ties in with triangulation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that, we have it on us at all time. It's the thing that, you know, we can use the video tape things, see things, but it's a document of where we are pretty much at all times.
Everybody has a chip inserted in their body, basically, when they put this thing in their pocket and walk around with it all day long.
Exactly.
And you're right. It's a recording device, so you can get other things. It tells who you called. It tells who you communicated with throughout the day, between phone calls, text messages, emails, pictures that you might have taken. God forbid you downloaded something from the internet. It tells that as well. And every single person has one. So even when I told you about my grandparents, up until they passed away relatively recently, they had one as well. So their house was technologically advanced, I guess, as well. But it's amazing that whereas that case that we had 20, 25 years ago, where you just had the testimony, now there is no more just testimony cases, because the number one question you can ask in pretty much every case where these type of things become relevant is, well, did you get the cell phone data from it? And in every case of substance that's not a DUI or something like that, or like a simple assault where a fight happens, I always ask clients when they come in, do you have your cell phone on you? Did you have any texts from those nights? It helps a client remember things. Yep. Well, you know what? Pull out your text messages, and that'll give you a timeline of where you were. Even if you don't want to have to go into the actual data of the phone, you go, all right, let's just piece it together using your text messages. Okay, and who else was there? Did you take any pictures that night? Oh, that's right. And you can get on social media from your cell phone too, right? And now you have a storyline of what happened from the entire evening that I don't have to just take your word for it when I say, okay, client, tell me what happened.
Yeah, the cell phone tells your life story right now. And technology has got to the point now where, and anybody who goes on social media knows this, like, why am I getting these ads? How do I, why was I talking about getting a new record player? And now on my Instagram feed, there's all these Instagram, or there's all these records players coming up. It's because our phones are listening to us. They're computing what we like. They're feeding us the information we like. That's why we go on to, you know, they know what websites we want to go to, and so they funnel you to the same, you know, websites that you would be interested in. So our phones have our whole life on it right there and able to make predictions about that.
And you talked about the cameras that the police may or may not have. You mentioned the ATMs that have cameras. Nowadays, if you're in an area like we're in downtown Westchester, which is a suburb of Philadelphia, and it's certainly not a huge metropolis, but it's a busy enough little town. There's cameras everywhere. Most businesses have some sort of camera, surveillance camera somewhere. For God's sakes, bars will have 40 different cameras. And believe it or not, that's where most of the trouble starts, in bars. So you want to find out what happened or where a person was that ultimately got in trouble, you can go to all the bars. Give me your surveillance videos. Let's run your credit cards, that kind of things. Another thing that happens with most bars, at least in Westchester, is they scan your IDs when you walk in. And they probably don't do it to you or me.
Yeah. We're past that now.
Yeah, exactly. But everybody else, they scan them. They just run them through a scanner, and they do it to cover themselves. Now they know, unless it's a fake ID, they know who has been in their establishment for that night. So they can run a list of, okay, this person, boom, 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 boom. And now you know, you start to create the story that way. There, not only are there business cameras, but they have different poll cameras, like the county or the borough or whatever. The police will have cameras sitting behind a traffic light or something like that, just so they catch things. And it's good for everybody. It really is. It says, okay, this person did do it, or this person didn't do it, or somebody else might be involved. And that has absolutely changed the way that we look at cases.
Nah, I think, you know, just hearing you lay that out, like, when you would have, in your lifetime as a defense attorney, back in the day, if you had a case involving assault that happened on the street, your go-to before you even got to court would be like, who was there? Okay, let me send the PI, private investigator, to go interview that person, see if there's other people involved, see who else we can track down. And that's pretty much as far as you could take that. But now, I've seen you in action enough times now at this point, it seems like you start with, where were you at? Okay, I'm getting that camera. I'm going to that bar. I'm going to that establishment. And, you know, before you even had your first hearing, you would have tracked down 10, 15 pieces of surveillance as a starting point.
And you've talked, and I know we have to wrap this up sometime soon, but you've talked as we were preparing for this thing. That kind of goes to our next step, is the presentation that we have to make in court nowadays. And how is that different? Not just by us, but by prosecutors.
Yeah, so like I said, as you and I were both former prosecutors, the presentation of evidence at that time was very basic. You know, you're not seeing a lot of, losing my train of thought here, the overhead projectors. You're not seeing overhead projectors.
the Elmos that they used to have?
Yeah, you're not seeing PowerPoint displays. That really wasn't. We had to kind of rely on, like, okay, your oral skills in the courtroom and the presentation that way. Maybe you have a chart or something you write something down on. Now, prosecutors are almost always using PowerPoint displays, highlighting different things. I had a trial a few years ago where the prosecutor absolutely annihilated me in closing argument because they were able to piece together their whole case on this very powerful PowerPoint slide, mixed in with audio from my client.
It's embedded into the PowerPoint.
Everything was in there. So not only their words that they wanted the jury to see in their closing were on the PowerPoint, video from the incident was incorporated into the closing argument PowerPoint, and audio was also incorporated in there. So it was just a very, this wouldn't have existed 10 years ago. This wouldn't have existed 10 to 15 years ago. But it was very helpful, I believe, for that prosecutor in the presentation of the thing, because the jury saw everything. They didn't have to just remember what they heard in the trial. They're seeing it all over again. It's like basically presenting their entire case all over again visually.
Yeah, and I think that's changed our profession as well. You can't just be the guy who or the young lady who thinks they're a good attorney and they can cross-examine somebody, because juries want more. They expect more, and if you can't deliver it to them, somebody in that situation is going to be able to. So if you went into your case thinking, look, I'm good at my closing argument, or I'm real good at my cross-examination, and you get done your closing, and then they have the last word, and they knock it out of the park with a PowerPoint that's embedded with video and with audio and everything, the jury goes, that guy did a lot better job. And the judge will always instruct the jury, you don't rule on the case based on who you thought did a better presentation. You rule upon the law and the facts. But guess what? It's impossible not to take a side based on the personalities. It just is. I mean, that doesn't always win you a case, and it doesn't, I guess it could lose you a case, but at the end of the day, you want to be liked by the people that you're presenting, because you're a salesperson. And I'm not saying you're BSing them, but you certainly have to be able to sell your product to the client, this being the jury or the judge, whichever it is. And so we have to be on our game. You know, we have to evolve with the technology. We got to become familiar with it. You can't just kind of, look, I'm older than you. So I have a 6-7 year jump, a head start on you. So I can't just go, you know what, I'm going to rest on my laurels here because I think I'm a good lawyer. No, I've got to learn the technology, because the cops are going to be down with it. They're going to be on top of everything. So I can't be wowed by what they're doing. I got to be up to speed with what they're doing, and hopefully maybe even one up them.
Yeah, we have to evolve.
Yeah.
We have to evolve, and you know, it's easy to get set in your ways and say, this is the way I've always done it, but they're not doing that.
No,
you know,
exactly.
They're getting better at what they're doing, because it's a balancing thing. You know, for every action, there's a reaction. They up their game, we come back. And it's back and forth. So obviously with the technology, I feel like it's in the prosecutor's favor right now. They just have more resources,
true,
more technology to get them more training. But we got to get to that next level, and I believe we will.
And technologically speaking, we have a pretty cool courthouse here in Chester County. Like I said, it's only, it's 15 years old at this point. But it has drop-down screens. It has Bluetooth capabilities everywhere. They're constantly updating things. And you can walk in there and know that this courtroom is easy to present my case. And I know in federal court that you do a lot of federal work, that it's the same way.
Same way. All the courts now are getting more integrated to keep up with technology.
Yeah, I still do some work in some other counties that haven't caught up to speed, and they're still rolling the television in on a dolly so that the jury can see it. But they'll catch up at some point. Listen, Steve, as always, this thing goes extremely fast, and I love talking this stuff with you.
Same.
And it's enjoyable, buddy, and I appreciate it. So everybody out there in Radio Land, this has been Steve Jarman and Dan Bush. Again, we're at Lamb McErlane in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And you can always look us up on our website, on the web, or on social media. And we can always talk to you then. And until next time, everybody take care.